The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to the She Word Mums, conversations that mums rarely have, but really should. I am your host, Nerissa Massa. Today's episode is an interesting one for sure. Motherhood is tough, it's not an easy gig, and it does not come with a manual, which for most of us means that we will get it wrong along the way, and we are very quick to learn that some days are all about survival. Now imagine navigating motherhood in the public eye. We're talking celebrities, influencers, athletes, politicians, and women who live parts of their motherhood journeys in front of an audience, whether they have chosen to or not. A recent study found that 7 out of 10 mothers say they feel judged on everything from how they feed their children to how they look, how they discipline, and even how clean their house is. And when you add a public platform into the mix, well, then that judgment multiplies and it is often louder, harsher, and far less forgiving. The double standards are staggering. Fathers are praised for showing up, mothers are picked apart for how they do it. A working mother is too career-focused, while a stay-at-home mom lacks ambition. And what about mums in the public eye? They are often expected to glow through it all, bounce back to their pre-pregnancy body by 6 weeks postpartum, and never admit they are struggling. To discuss this and so much more, I have 3 incredible mums. I'm going to start to my right. And with me, I've got very privileged to have Honourable Minister Miriam Dalli. So Miriam has graced our TV screens for as long as I can remember, and definitely before becoming a mum. She was first known for being a newscaster and a journalist, later entering the political sphere, even being a member of the European Parliament. Miriam is definitely used to being in the public eye, but I am thrilled that she's here to discuss with us how the dimension of motherhood has slotted into her very public life. Miriam, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to come and discuss motherhood with us today.
Thank you, Nerissa.
On my left, I've got Honourable Rebecca Borch as my next guest, an engineer by profession, having studied in the UK. She was also a part-time journalist, which is where she developed her love for politics. She contested the general election in 2022 and now holds the position of shadow minister. In addition to this, Rebecca has also recently graduated as a lawyer, whilst also being a wife and a mum of 2, one of them being 7 weeks old. Might I just add, Rebecca, that is a lot. Wow. Thank you so much for being here
today. Thank you for having me.
And my last guest, not a newbie to the She Word, Lara Azzopardi, and not a newbie to our TV screens as well. Lara is an actress, producer, nurse, a wife, and a mummy. And if you follow Maltese television, Lara is definitely a familiar face, having graced our screens since she herself was a child. So for Lara, she's not only a mum in the public eye, she was also raised by a mum in the public eye. Welcome, Lara. I'm so excited to hear your thoughts and stories as
Thank
someone who's...
Thank you for inviting me. It's an honour to be here.
Such a incredible moment today.
Yes.
It's not a pressure on the table.
I'm very privileged to be sharing a table with the three of you. And I want to start off, there's so many questions I have, but I want to start off by describing your journey into motherhood. You were all in the public eye before becoming mums. And then you see the 2 lines or the plus sign on the pregnancy test. What was that like? Was it difficult to hide your pregnancies from the world? Did you want to hide your pregnancies from the world? How did you feel at that point? Was it a concern when you saw the line of, oh my God, now the public are going to see my bump?
I've seen those lines so many times before my actual pregnancy with Zara. So for me, it was a little bit of a struggle keeping the pregnancy. So apart from that, I chose not to show my pregnancy until I was so huge towards the end of the pregnancy that my husband was like, listen, you do realize you look like a Christmas tree, eh? because it was winter, obviously, so I used to have my big coats on and everything. So on the front, when I'm looking at the mirror before I'm actually leaving home in the morning, I used to look okay, thinking I could hide it very well, very nicely. But obviously from the side, I was quite huge. I was pregnant with a girl, maybe this myth of having a girl is being huge. Yeah.
It
definitely worked on me. So, yes, I did. I managed to hide my pregnancy. I managed, I believe.
Yeah. In my case, I think I looked at it a bit differently. Because I look at myself as an individual that separate or the public persona is really entrenched into me. So I don't look at it like, oh, I have to worry about what the public might say or how the people would react. Mm-hmm. And probably that's because I was involved in television since the age of 18. And I used to do newscasting, political programs. So I think I got used to being judged since the age of 18. And that somehow became part of how I have to deal with things.
It was the fear of losing the child, I believe. The fact that...
But you said...
I had previous miscarriages.
So
I had so much fear of showing my pregnancy and then having those congratulations in order. And then eventually, like, I'm not pregnant anymore.
To break the news off.
So that was a little bit tough on me, which did not leave a good effect on my well-being. Mm-hmm. So that's why I chose not to.
There's another issue. My elder is 12 years old. So we're speaking about this happening 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. And 13 years ago, social media was totally different.
Yes.
And
that
makes sense. Yes. Social media
makes a big difference.
I have to say, 13 years ago, whilst I was pregnant, I was doing TV programs. There was the electoral campaign, so I was on TV all the time. I was in my final year reading for the law degree, so I was going to university at the same time. I'm mentioning this because I remember when I had to do my viva, I was like 37.
I had my exams, my final exams at 13, 9 weeks. Yes. I thought my waters were going to break whilst I was doing an exam.
So it wasn't a matter of I have to hide this or I have to announce this. You know, it was part of me and it was just happening as things were moving forward.
Life is never plain sailing, but your period is one challenge that shouldn't ever stop you or stand in your way. Tampax is the number one combination for comfort, protection, and discretion. Tampax tampons are independently tested so you can be certain that there's no harmful substances present. Tampax adapts to your unique body shape to provide you protection even when you're living life to the full, because nothing should stop you. Period.
But I think the social media point is a very valid point,
definitely.
Because there's no pressure to kind of, do I announce it? Do I make it public? For you, it was just like, you see the bump, it's there. I don't need to make a big deal about it. It's just there. You notice it. If you want to say congratulations, you can. But, you know, it is what it
is. If you don't,
that's fine as well.
I had very two different experiences. As you said, I just had a baby. So this one was very different to the first one. My first one is only 2 years, so it's not that long ago either. I was already in parliament when I saw the two lines. I was shocked. we had just gotten married, and we started trying and we got pregnant. So I was really, really happy, but I was shocked. And I remember I had a public accounts committee, we had a good session, a hot session. I said, I have to push this out of my mind. And go continue with my duties. You know, I mean, I had just found out literally. I tried the pregnancy test, the second one in the parliament bathroom, because I went to buy the digital one to confirm the one I had. I said, okay, now so I have to move on. And that was the whole pregnancy. So that set the tone sort of for the whole pregnancy. This is part of who I am. I have my duties, as Miriam said, it is who I am. So it was very intertwined. I think I did announce it on social media. I was very excited. So it was my first pregnancy. So I was happy to announce it. With my second, it was very, very different. I found out and got sick straight away. I had hyperemesis, quasi-hyperemesis, which is basically I was sick all the time. Mm-hmm. So the first 3 months, I was really, really unwell. I couldn't function. And I had a toddler at home. And I had my work, my parliamentary duties. I was really, really miserable because I was so sick all the time. I couldn't hold down anything. And that kind of changed the way I looked at the pregnancy. So I didn't want to announce it. I wanted to keep it between us as well. Not out of a fear of losing the baby, because I didn't, luckily didn't have that experience previously, but out of being so sick, so tired, there wasn't that excitement as I have to say it wasn't that as excitement as there was with my first. Eventually I got better, so the first 3 months passed and you know the hormone settled down a bit, and I decided to keep it between us. I never announced it on social media, but I mean, walking into parliament I used to get looks, and then my colleagues, especially some of the closer ones, were like, I could tell they were kept back because you don't want to ask that question, you know. It's a very awkward question.
It but is.
Some of the closer ones I could tell. And I obviously started saying, yes, I'm pregnant. But I announced it 2 weeks before, so officially announced it on social media 2 weeks before because I was going to give birth. Otherwise, I didn't feel the need to officially announce it, honestly. It's not an obligation at the end
Absolutely.
Of the day. If you want to, it's fine. Like, as I did in my first one, I mean, we put up a post specifically about it, but the second one, we didn't. So I think it's really up to the pregnancy, the individual, the experiences.
That's right. It's a personal decision. I mean, we're not obliged to actually go and announce it.
Exactly.
No.
I felt a bit of pressure on the second one to announce it because I was showing. But then I said, you know, no, this is something personal. I don't have to announce that I am pregnant. No.
And just on your point, Lara, anyone who goes through loss, pregnancy loss, it's already hard enough to announce it sometimes to family and friends, because you always think of, if I've said I'm pregnant, I also have to be prepared to tell these people I've lost the baby. And it's not an easy conversation to have. And no matter how much awareness we have, it's still not a taboo, but it's still a very difficult conversation to
have. This points out the fact as well for people that when they meet you, for example, they're like, so you're getting older, so you should really get pregnant now, you should really
I was older, Javier, when I got pregnant with my first.
You're reminding me of something. I was head of news at one, and there was this person, very well known, very highly respected, but old in age. And I used to get these weekly calls. And he used to call me, "Hi, Miriam, you're okay?" "Yes, I'm fine. So tell me, did you find a boyfriend by now?" I'm like, it wasn't like close, you know, it wasn't family or something. I'm like, "No, not yet. I'm enjoying the single life." It's true. I got married at the age of 34. So for them, probably it was very late in the day. And you don't have a boyfriend. I said, "How old are you now?" I'm like,
I got the same.
I'm 30. You're growing older. The clock is ticking.
Oh my God.
I got exactly the same.
"I'll call you again. Bye." And he's like really angry that I didn't find a boyfriend.
I would have called him first when I was like, "I'm pregnant."
So, you know, there was still this mentality.
Yes.
I think it's still the same, you know, that... hey, if you want to have kids, get married, have kids as soon as possible.
I'm going to touch upon a point you mentioned earlier when you said, I've been in the media since I was 18. So it's almost for you, there's no private Miriam, public Miriam. It is you. And so this question, you probably will say, it has never been an issue for me. So you've never felt, you know, before thinking of starting a family, how will motherhood impact my public life, my work in the media? Because let's be honest, when you are in the public eye, you are relevant if you stay present. The minute you move away from the public eye and you are out of people's minds, your relevance becomes less and less. Not so much like any other job where you take maternity leave, they keep your job for you and you go back. If you are... even an influencer, if you stop posting on Instagram to take time off, you become irrelevant. So was this a consideration before having children? Or was this a concern when you were pregnant and you thought, oh my God, now I'm going to have a child. What will my work look like? What will people still want me to be on the media doing certain roles? You know, Lara, in your case as an actress. But I also found out today, in Parliament, you don't get maternity leave. So that wasn't even a choice for you guys. I mean, that's insane.
Not even in the European Parliament.
That blows my mind, because we're in 2025 and we're trying to push women to to, you know, to be on the forefront and gender equality. And then we don't even recognize that a woman, because some people are ready to bounce back. But if you've had birth trauma, if you, know, you were in a wheelchair for 3 months, if you couldn't get yourself back up after, I mean, so were these considerations that you had to take into account? Like, how will this impact the rest of my career?
In my case, probably because I worked in the newsroom as well. So you work under a lot of pressure. You have a deadline every day. So for me, and this is something ingrained in my mind, I work day by day in the sense. I say, what do I have tomorrow? Okay, I can do this. How am I going to juggle the kids and everything? And I try to make it work. If I see that it can't work, I try to change things. But I take it day by day, because if I take a whole week, if I take a whole month, it gets like a mammoth task. And, you know, I feel like I can't deal with a mammoth task or something that big. So I try to dissect everything into smaller pieces. And taking things day by day works for me. And it was the same thing with getting married, having kids, etc. So for me, obviously, I wanted kids, because after those phone calls, then I felt some kind of pressure that I have to do this. But it wasn't like, let's have a discussion on how things will change when I'm pregnant or when we'll have the kids. For me, it was like, okay, this is another phase, and I'll try to adapt according to how things pan out. If it's plain sailing, it's fine. If it's not plain sailing, we try and, you know, do things differently. And I think that takes a lot of pressure from you. But speaking about the European Parliament and maternity, my second kid was born in Brussels. I was in the European Parliament at that time. I was the coordinator of the Socialists and Democrats on the Environment Committee. Okay. So I had to lead my colleagues in the committee and on all the files related when it comes to plenary. And I remember I had an assistant, my advisor, my primary advisor. She was pregnant as well. We were hoping that she was going to have her kid like a month later than mine. Kane came later than expected, and her kid came earlier than expected. Mm. So I went in on Sunday, she went in on Wednesday, and I ended up with the office empty. So on Wednesday, I had to go into Parliament.
Oh my God.
And this is not something I suggest to anyone, because it was tough and it was exhausting. But I had to go in. And I remember taking Kane with me. I remember I had committee meetings where he had to come with me. My God. Judged negatively, yeah? Even in the local media.
I remember this.
I was judged. Someone took a picture and they made like a whole harsh judgment article about it. It was an insulting article, to be very honest. But you get judged. And that's why I told you, I think I learned along the way that I'm not saying it is something which we should accept. But I learned along the way that you get judged for what you do, for what you don't, for how you look, for what you wear, if you do makeup, if you don't, what you say, what you don't.
I find this mind-blowing that you were judged negatively instead of looking at the problem being this woman has just given birth 4 days ago.
And instead of using her as a role model for a multitasking mother.
There is no maternity leave she could have relied on.
Yes,
and she has honored her commitments with her baby. I mean, day four and day five, at least in my experience, were when the tears started coming because the milk started coming and the hormones. And this lady is leading a committee. And instead of applauding her and saying, you know, we're with you, we support you, we judge negatively. And while I have you on that, judgment, I mean, every woman gets judged. Even if someone's walking their pushchair down the street and they have decided they're not going to wear any makeup today, all of a sudden it's like, in Maltese we say, come and tell it, you know? But for you guys, it must be a million times worse.
I'm going through it at the moment, so I can't be quite honestly. I mean, it's hard in the sense, even I'm not the same weight I was when I, before I gave birth and with two children right after each other, you don't bounce back my lower. So yes, I do feel the pressure. I'm being very honest here. I mean, at the moment, even clothes I'm wearing, this top is maternity. My trousers are normal and my jacket is probably not fitting properly. Just finding the clothes to wear in the public eye, even at home personally, but even if I go to Parliament and on the first day I had to get up and give a speech. I wasn't, you know, I feel the difference. I know I look different, and I think we've moved forward in the sense that not as many people judge. I think most, especially other women, understand and aren't going to be like, what is she wearing? But you yourself feel different. You are different.
Out of milk? Bread's gone and the kids are hungry? Don't stress. There's a Dave's just around the corner. Open 24/7. Or skip the trip. Just tap the Dave's app. Tap, tap, tayyep. They'll deliver straight to your door. No minimum order, speedy delivery, and fresh fruit packed with care. Dave's cares about you.
Your body is different, the way you think is different. And I mean, I think it's more that rather than the fear of being judged. It's more myself that is judging me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the first thing I said as soon as I came in here, I was talking to someone was, because I need to lose weight. You know, the pressure is me, myself, putting it on myself rather than because, I don't know, Miriam on the other side is going to judge me. Of course not. You know, it's not that. I think it's an even ourselves, judging ourselves at postpartum, especially you're very, you know, you're different.
But I think it's a culture issue.
It is a culture issue.
I think
it's
a culture issue that, you know, there's this pressure on women in particular. It might be on men as well, but obviously I'm speaking as a woman.
Exactly.
But I think it's on women in particular that look in a certain way. You need to act in a certain way. You can't be too emotional. Yeah. Because if you're, you know, if you're too emotional, you're judged harshly for it. If you're not emotional, then all of a sudden you're very strict and superva and a bitch. You know,
I think we all get it. It's somewhere or another.
We can't talk freely. And I think we're judged for everything. And then we feel like, you know, I have to look perfect. I mean, you look amazing.
Thank you.
So,
but it's a change. It's a change. And, you know, when you go through a change, it's always tough adjusting.
It's about perception as well, but or how much we allow ourselves to receive and perceive negativity as well. I don't know the way I see it. Like, for example, most of the time I'm wasting my time scrolling and seeing comments of what people have to say about models, about politicians, about people in the public eye, influencers, and everyone seems to have the freedom and the right of, if I woke up in a bad mood today, then I feel like attacking someone, I'm just going to attack someone behind the screen. Mm-hmm. And most of the profiles will be fake profiles, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. And this is really unfair. So,
and they feel empowered, like, you know, I
got a comment recently. I can't forget. It was a political post. Okay, I expect political comments. Fair enough, Ansi, that is part of the job. But one of the comments was, "Musha hiat mur taxa lil plati. You should go and wash plates." I was like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, these are the kind of things which are...
Oh my God.
This is where the judgment comes. This is where the feeling of can you be too emotional? Can you be too strict? This is where the pressure comes in.
You're reminding me of another instance. So in the European Parliament, I was working on this legislation to reduce emissions from private cars and light commercial vehicles. And it was a very technical topic. I loved doing it in the European Parliament. Like, you know, I was leading this legislation, having meetings with car manufacturers. And Malta Today, I remember they carried an article on this. And one of the comments was, and what does she understand in cars? The only car she understands in is a pushchair. Go push a pushchair.
Oh,
that was
my.
The comment. I was like,
at least it's a comment online. I've gotten that on my face as an engineer. Now I'm talking about. I work in building construction industry, Jeffrey, you can imagine the comments I've gotten. I can tell you many. I was on site once, someone came up to me, told me, "You're the architect secretary." I told him, "No, I'm the engineer on site, not the architect secretary." Stereotypes. Or another time, I was explaining to a client technically how to operate a piece of equipment. There was the salesperson next to me, and he was a male, but he was much younger than me. I explained to him, went up to him. Is she saying the right thing? Is she correct? I was supposed to be the engineer. The other person was the salesperson, miskin, official. He's like, I don't know what to say, you know? But these comments are...
But for you guys, it's worse because you are in the public eye. So you get them tenfold.
I'm on a very different level from...
But you must get...
These women next to me over here. I mean...
It's different, but the same. My profession, I can
see it. For example, because the initial question was that you have to keep up with your job, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, like when
my
when
public commitments is not my personal professional job. Mm-hmm. So that is what I see different from these women next to me over here. So in my case, I got pregnant. I was filming a series called Name the Chaufa.
Yeah.
Which was a commitment that I had from the previous 10 years because it had ended 10 years before. And then Pierre Portelli, the producer and writer, said, I want to continue the story 10 years later. So I knew 10 years previously that the story would one day recommence. Mm-hmm. So we're back on set, and that is when I got pregnant. And I went up to Pierre and I'm like, we have a problem. And he's like, what's happened? Because thing is, for those... to explain a little bit in depth, we were filming according to location. So for example, if from episode 1 till episode 15, we are filming at Nerissa's house. Mm. We have to film all the scenes from episode 1 till episode 15 in this particular location. Mm, okay. So that would mean that I would have to take photos of my continuity, for example. If my hair and my roots are up till here, I have to keep the same continuity. My nails have to remain the same. You know, and during this time, my wrinkles were increasing and my boobs were growing bigger and my tummy, and I was all very circular from everywhere. I was like really rounded. Oh. So how could you keep continuity in such a short period of time where every week I was gaining so many kilos and water retention?
But even your face, it just changes. And like you said, this is just a hormonal thing.
And how did you do it? Because now I'm curious. Yes.
I actually managed. Previously, Rebecca mentioned she was really bad with smells and with. So I had that as well. I was on set every day. I had my full-time job in the morning and then I was filming in the afternoon or in the weekends. And every time I get close to someone, I used to smell this wild smell of fish, Madonna. I was really bad with smells. I used to get really sick. And then when you have these close-ups and these confrontations with very people close to you, I'm like, please don't get offended. But I'm like, I used to get really sick. So in the scenes, I used to get these really red eyes and veins coming out of my face because I was, vomiting nonstop.
Oh my God.
We managed. And then we decided we had to film all my scenes at one go. And then I stopped for a bit because I was seeing some blood in my pregnancy. I was in bed rest and all the drama of the whole wide world. During Chaufa. But we managed. We had to change a little bit the angles and the clothes.
That's it. We manage.
Of course. Yes.
We manage. We're all here managing.
You said one thing. And again, this brings us back to being a woman and being a mom. You went to Pierre and you said, we have a problem.
Houston.
You know, like, I'm pregnant. It shouldn't be.
Not a problem for me. But for the production.
But you know what I mean? It is. And when you are... In, you know, for you guys, much more than maybe other roles where you can kind of take a break.
Because it feels like your blessing is going to be a problem for other people around you at work. You have to give a handover for...
I think it applies to everyone. It applies to us in the political sphere. It applied to Lara in her acting sphere. But if you're a teacher...
Yes. I mean, have to inform them. Yes, employed. Yes, yes. I mean, if you're self-employed, because you say if something
it's crazy.
Happens,
yeah, it's,
you
it's
know
crazy.
What about quasi, my quasi. Income?
Politics is less of a concern because politics. I mean, the parliamentary duties are what they are. But then, politics is how much you want to give as well. So your job, you have clients. On the phone constantly. With you, it's different.
I tend to have
lines. But don't forget, yours is a full-time job. Mine is not.
Yes,
I have
in
to,
my case,
I have
it's not like I can take it easy today.
Yes, yes, yes. For me, I have my job and the politics. So I have to somehow cope with the clients calling me, no, I'm on maternity leave. Then the politics.
A newborn baby and a toddler.
But the politics, as I said, I mean, for me especially, you give as much or as little as you want on a district level, mm-hmm. especially. Yes. My parliamentary duties are what they are. But technically, they are not a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I have a full-time job apart from that. And there is a big problem, I think, which everyone faces, mm-hmm. especially if you're self-employed. If you're self-employed, I'm sorry, I can't come on site at the moment because I'm on maternity leave. But what am I going to do with the project? You're mm-hmm. going to wait 4 months exactly. till I come back? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you have this aspect which everyone, I think, faces, mm-hmm. especially if you're self-employed. But I think, as you mentioned, teachers, anyone who's mm-hmm. who has a
commitment.
A commitment.
Yeah.
Even being a stay-at-home mom and you have other children. Mm-hmm. Even then, what are you going to tell your toddler? I can't take care of you because I need to take care of the newborn, which is something I'm facing at the moment.
You have to be there and you have to give them 100% plus.
Exactly. So whatever situation I think mm-hmm. a mother is in, we struggle. We have to juggle and we have to balance and we have to do it no matter what. So being in the public eye or not, I think it doesn't make that much of a difference. Maybe there are certain extra issues, but everyone faces these problems, I feel.
Because at this day and age, there are a lot of new evolving influencers as well. So there are many mummies who are not in the public eye, but through social media, they are kind of now in the public eye. So everyone kind of, at this day and age, chooses to show their private lives as well. Which is something which I am not very much in line with. And this is a conversation we had on the phone earlier before. Because I tend to choose what I post, for example, as well. But going back to your argument earlier, we do see these struggles and women juggling, which is a very nice thing because I think that it is quite a blessing with every woman is capable of multitasking as well.
Yeah. The difference is...
I'm not being sexist, but yes.
No, absolutely. I think what we are here to discuss today is you guys have to do it publicly. Mm-hmm. And while every woman does multitask, when I fail or when I have a bad day, I don't necessarily have to be on television and smiling or, you know, in parliament giving a speech or making decisions which affect the whole country. I can go to work for sure, but there is an element of privacy in my life which you guys unfortunately have had to forego.
But I think we learn along the way.
In what sense?
At least in my case, it was you have to learn along the way. You have to learn what you keep private and what becomes public. You have to learn to put aside if something bad happened during the day and you focus on the task mm-hmm. At hand. You have to learn which comments matter and which comments don't. You have to learn that scrolling on your mobile to see what people are saying about you will not give you any value added in your life. Probably it will just make you a bit more frustrated. So you have to learn to discount what is being said mm-hmm. about you and to understand what is constructive criticism and what are comments that are there just to, you know, speak negatively and judge you in a negative way without mm-hmm. actually giving anything constructive. But you learn that, I think, along the way, because it doesn't come, you know, no one teaches you how to do it. And no one tells you, like, now see these comments. These comments are good. You look at them. Now these comments you discard. You have to learn that yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to act with your kids, how to teach them, how to act with others. If they get bullied, what do they do? How to pick their friends? So, you know, and sometimes you make mistakes.
Like sometimes their mom.
You say, Lami, I did that. I wouldn't do it again. But it's important that you learn as you go along.
It's always a learning curve.
It is. Like with everything, whether you're in your career, whether when you become a mom, no one gives you a manual. The hardest thing for you is that certain failures people see more of.
Yes.
So for example, one of the myths is that to a certain extent, your life is a big chunk of it, which is public. But have you faced misconceptions about what people think goes on in your personal life? And you're like, that is absolutely not what happens at home for us. And people think you hear or you see, people think you have a different life at home than you actually do.
Yes.
Yes, but these are funny comments. I mean, at the end of the day, people Anything think funny? I never cook, for example.
People think
because I always find my food ready because my husband's a chef. But they have to know that I'm the one who cooks at home because he works long hours.
So,
no, for example, I was in discussions and people thought that I remember when I was in the European Parliament with two kids. Of course, she does it. She has a nanny at home. It doesn't have a nanny, you know. I was running like a headless chicken from one place to another and trying to juggle everything. But you take it in your stride.
Or else, for example, people think that my full-time job is acting and I don't have a full-time job, which is obviously, at the time, I was a medical device specialist, so I was covering even hours on call, even at hospital and stuff like that. So people think, oh, she's a lady of leisure, you know, she has her husband who cooks for her and she's acting. And like Miriam was saying, if you don't mind me calling, because I'm a personal level, so I took advantage of one another
for ages.
So yes, my mother is still a full-time working mommy because she still hosts her daily shows on television as well. So my support system is very limited as well. Mm. So then again, thanks for childcare as well. So I have some hours where she's going to childcare and I can do my stuff and go to work. But then guess what? You receive that call. She's sick. Can you come pick her up? Yes. And these days of being sick when they're so young, I think that was the hardest part of my baby years.
Because you have to reschedule everything.
Oh, yes. And then you get sick.
Yes.
And most of the time when you get sick, you're worse than your child.
It's amazing how that happens. I don't know. They get sick, God bless them after 2 days. They're fine and I'm there crouching. And, you know.
It's because before you had kids, no one used to sneeze in your eyeball. Now there is no person.
Literally. Everywhere.
So the germs really come into you. You know, there's no personal space.
No personal space with a toddler.
They slobber over you with their snot. And there is no avoiding it, really. So
but we love them.
Yes, and we wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, my immunity is going
That's
strong.
That's so personal,
But speaking of misconceptions, let's bring it on the funny. Have you ever had any embarrassing moments with your children in public where you're like, no, please? So
many of them.
I'm sure I did. But they're kids.
Exactly.
I mean, so I don't care. They're kids. Listen, I mean, you succumb to pressure as much as you want, in my opinion. So, for example, I had instances where I was campaigning for the European Parliament or campaigning for the general election. But now they're growing a bit older. Where I was like, you know, doing this very serious discussion. And Kane is the younger one who loves the spotlight. And Kane comes along because he wants to show everyone that he's there. And I end up doing a discussion with him on my lap. But they're kids.
Sweet. No, I had one. This was bad. So I was obviously pregnant and I was explaining to my 2-year-old, not even two at the time, she was younger, that mommy has a baby in her belly. So mommy has a baby in her belly and we say hi to the baby. And at home, she used to put up my top and say, hello, baby. And we were out. I don't know where we were, but in public. And someone goes, so you're going to be a big sister? She goes, and I was wearing a dress. Yes. She put up my dress. Wanted to die.
Oh my God.
Miss Kia, she did a no dress, stop, don't put up my dress. But she said hello to the baby.
Rebecca Borge flashing people.
I'm like, no. that was recent and that was embarrassing, yes.
Keep your self-care journey on track in just a few clicks with Myoka Spas. Whether for a moment of disconnection, a complete body-mind reset, or a bonding time together, book online stress-free at myoka.com or use the new Myoka app. Complimentary spa facilities on every visit.
No, I breastfed my child for a long time because, as I was speaking to Narissa earlier, we had some dietary issues when she was still a baby. So, luckily, my productivity of milk was quite strong. So I continued to breastfeed for a long time. But when she was much younger, you cannot explain to a 3-month-old and a 2-month-old, whatever the age was, that she cannot just put your top down and your boobies out and she's drinking at her own leisure at any time of day, whether you're out in the public or not. So I used to get my drape and everything, to cover myself really nicely. I got really judged on breastfeeding. I mean, my daughter used to put her hand in, even to sleep and to comfort herself. She used to put her hand in, which I used to allow it. It's such a nice thing to bond with your baby. And most of the time I used to put her under my top and, you know, and she used to breastfeed and she used to sleep while she's still breastfeeding. But I got judged many times in the public.
In what way?
In stuff like, for example, I do ridiculous Maltese words. Miss Artisti out at Tinzadi, you know, like she's removing her clothes here. And one time, and let me tell you, there is a certain niche of people who are ready to judge, and most of the time they're men as well. So because women tend to, they have this more maternal instinct, so probably they do understand a little bit more. But yes, it happened. Once I uploaded a photo when I gave birth to my daughter, and I was struggling with weight after the pregnancy and all, and I posted this really beautiful photo with my very big round tummy. And I was wearing this bra top, a black bra top and a blazer. So I only had my little cleavage
showing.
This really big tummy in summer. And people actually posted comments because I had this black bra top. Because I don't usually post photos like that. But this was like a real strong photo of symbolizing the maternity phase. So. And I judged as well, so.
It's incredible.
You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
And what I am realizing from this conversation.
But at the time, it really hit me.
Ah, okay.
Because I was struggling with long hours to sleep, with a colic baby. She wasn't yet diagnosed with the CMPA. It was feeling like, oh my God, I have to mention this particular instant. I just remembered. Most of the time when you get these questions, you walk out and then you remember something.
I remember it now, so she said it. I was like,
I think this was my biggest hit on the nail. So I wrote this article of the same photo and I was saying stuff like similar to your introduction in this podcast here. And I was like, no one prepares you to understand what your baby's cries are about and when she's crying, what she needs, because you have to understand the newborn baby's language. And like I said, she was a very colicky baby. So there was this particular media platform who literally got this liner saying, no one prepares you for how much the baby will be crying, blah, blah, blah. And all the hatred comments on Facebook. Ah, yes, of course, because you're not used to raising children, because you don't even have brothers and sisters, because you're not used to being with kids. Ah, yes, because being a mother, Hanini, is not about butterflies, unicorns, and glitters. And I called this news portal. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. The whole article, only that part you got.
Yes, it's clickbait.
I was really bad. I was really bad. I started like raising my voice and they had to remove the article.
Because the thing is...
It really affected me, Madhav.
What they don't realize is you are still going through the hormones. You are still affected by pregnancy loss. And while you are absolutely grateful for having a beautiful baby girl, that doesn't mean it's not hard. You know, because I just remember saying, but why am I not grateful? Why am I not grateful? They're here, they're healthy. It doesn't mean sleep deprivation doesn't get to you, you know, all of these.
Oh, but what I am. Deprivation.
I slept a total of 1 hour last night. Oh. So at the moment, I'm like,
you're doing really fantastic.
I need a coffee.
I totally get you. My younger one, I spent the first 5 months. He used to wake 8 times during the night.
This one's like this. And I wasn't
every
used
hour,
to it. My daughter wasn't like that.
Even my older one wasn't like that. I wasn't used
exactly.
to it.
Yeah.
But this one, every hour, he was waking up. Uh-huh. I used to wake up 8 hours. Then, mind you, because I had to go in work earlier than expected, I had to go in to work like a zombie going around. I swear, I was like exhausted. And you have to like focus on work, mm-hmm. and you yes. can't. I mean, sleep deprivation.
No,
is
it's.
Bad,
it's I think yes. it's the hardest thing on.
But
any
you know
woman
what it makes you stronger. All this we're saying, and the women I speak to. I mean, we all go through our different experiences, but my conclusion is that now I'm not being. You said earlier I'm not being sexist, but I think we are stronger. And all these things make us stronger. You're judged harshly. It breaks you, but Hold then on. It makes you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
All these things with kids on how am I going to coping, it breaks you, but then it makes you stronger.
Yes.
And I think that's how we need to look at things, because otherwise it would be...
At the same time, we cannot just... accept certain things. I think it does make us stronger, and I feel it does make me stronger even like in the midst of it at the moment. But we shouldn't accept certain things that sort of if we have help, we should accept help, because this is a big thing of postpartum as well. Well, at least I went through it, that I find it hard to accept help sometimes. That
it's true.
I want to take care of my own kids, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel the guilt of not taking care of them. At the same time, I feel the guilt of going. I think this is a motherly thing. The guilt is matter where I am, I'm feeling guilty.
Are you different with your second child? Was it with the first child that you were very overprotective and you want to do everything yourself, not accepting help?
You learn.
You don't change.
I think you learn. I accepted more help with my second, but the guilt is. And I was talking
about
this.
I would have taken help.
No, I take help. I have to, but I feel the guilt, matter what.
When I was in Brussels, I didn't have anyone. There was my husband, obviously, but there was mom. God bless her.
My mother as well, yes.
Poor
yes.
thing, she came up to Brussels and she spent like the first 3 months with me.
Yes.
And it was amazing. Otherwise, I wouldn't have managed.
Yes. No, even I. Same with me. My husband, but my husband has his own work, which takes up a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But my mother, yes. I wouldn't cope.
Moms are incredible.
Yeah, especially
but you're
with
right,
my first.
In saying, I mean, the message out there, and you're 100% right. If there's help, take it.
Because we feel this guilt that we have to do everything ourselves. And then, especially, maybe this is where the public eye, that we have to do even more in the, because we're in the public eye. So you're doing, no matter what you're doing, you're feeling guilty.
Yes.
I think that's not
but sometimes
the right message to give. I think we need to, whatever help you can get and whatever makes you, we were discussing before we
it
came in.
It might not be up to our standards, maybe sometimes.
Yeah. But that's but you have
life,
to learn
you
to
need
accept.
To,
compromise.
In life you need to learn that, I don't want to say, but if my husband...
Yes, I was just
going to
say the same thing.
I
was just going
to
say.
And maybe my husband doesn't do it exactly to my... I'm fine with it. Thank you.
Yes.
You're
close
amazing.
Your eyes, move on.
You did this.
Exactly.
Yes. You're one in a million. I mean,
that's easy.
It's not easy.
Especially when it comes to the baby. At least a newborn with my daughter. Now she's a toddler. My husband, they love playing rough, throwing her up and she's giggling and that's fine. But with a newborn, I'm very...
protective. Yes, that's the thing.
They're so small and delicate that I feel very protective. Mm-hmm. But like Miriam said, when my husband says, you know, it's my night, because we're trying to take it in turns who spends the night now. Because at the beginning, I was doing most of the nights because he was in the NPICU and then he was in hospital, and we're still trying to breastfeed. But now, my husband is taking one night, I am taking the other. I mean,
do you manage to close your eyes and sleep and you're still listening to
But us? This is where what you said comes in. I need to let go and say, no, I need to get my rest, because otherwise I'm, you know, but no matter what, first of all, my husband is the baby's father. So
Exactly.
He should be taking one of the nights and doing his duties as well, because I mean, we're both in this together. But yes, I feel that part of me where he's not doing it exactly how I want. The bottle isn't being sterilized in exactly the same way, or the Muslim cloth is on the bassinet. Safe sleeping. No, take it off, you know. So I have these, but at the same time,
yes, I'm quite.
We need to let go. We need to let go.
The way he's holding the bottle because of the air.
Because of the air, yes.
And really and truly, when you let go, they feel more part of their upbringing. Yes. They feel more part of the family.
We have to let them be inclusive
nucleus.
As well.
We are. I mean, we preach about equality, being equal parents, but then it's up to, well, let me speak about me. It's up to me to let go and let him do his part in an equal way. Because if I'm the one telling him, which I do, and I have to admit, the bottle, his head isn't being held properly, because he's a bit colicky as well. So I'm a bit weary about the amount of air going in. Mm-hmm. But he has to do his thing as well. So I think
this
is...
We have to show them how to do it.
I think this is where, as women in general, yes, it's good that we take on a lot. It makes us stronger. And yes, I believe it. But at the same time, we have to let go a bit. And we have to accept whatever help, even if it's not up to our standards sometimes. Mm.
That was one thing we spoke about, because you said initially, did you discuss with your partner and with your husband, if you have kids, how things would change? I think, because I'm remembering now, one thing that we sat down and discussed was, listen, there was a period in our lives where he was like the breadwinner and I was taking like a step back, because I remember I ended my job and I had to do some freelancing. And there were other moments, like when we went to the European Parliament, where I was the breadwinner and he was supporting me. Mm-hmm. And that helped a lot. And it is precisely the point that we're mentioning, that, you know, we speak a lot about equality, but we need to give space for that equality. To happen, and make it the norm rather than the exception. I'm saying this because my husband, initially, when we were like having this arrangement, he used to get the comments like, you're at home, you're staying at home, you, and you know, this niggering comments from his friends.
Yes.
But you know, I think with examples like this, it becomes the norm rather than an exception.
And
like
we have to want
to
be the ones to accept that norm as well.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of the times the problem isn't even society. It could be society as well. But it's even the mother, the woman themselves that don't want to let go.
Yes.
I see it even not in mother issues enough. When we first got married, how the way he'd hang the clothes.
Yes.
So he wouldn't hang them in the right way. Yes. And I'd comment and I'd be like, no, why am I commenting? You know, these things need to be done equally. Yeah. He has his way, I have mine.
Exactly.
Because if I comment, then Señala, I'm feeling like I'm doing them better. And this is my role.
And it makes him feel empowered. Yes.
And it's human nature, because if you criticize me all the time, if
exactly.
I'm
not going to do it
I'm
anymore.
I'm not cooking perfect, you're not cleaning perfectly. I'll tell you, okay, you do it.
Exactly.
And we're perpetuizing that exactly. norm of the women should do it.
I think in 2025,
I'm very guilty.
Women and moms,
we all are.
But in 2025, what we are as millennial moms and as millennial women, we are breaking so many traditions and stereotypes of dads being able to stay at home, of women being breadwinners, of it being 50-50, of so many different things, but it is of how we're raising our children, you know, letting them get in touch with their emotions, no smacking, no, you know, kind of not gentle parenting, but kind of doing things a little bit different, being more aware. So we're breaking a lot of generational stereotyping, which is not easy, because we were brought up by women.
who, for most of us, did it all. And most of us didn't have, well, at least in my case, my father was present, but he wasn't a present father. He never changed nappies. He never said to my mother, oh, you rest with the newborn. I will make dinner tonight. My mother handled it all. So my role model was someone who just got on with it. And so that makes it harder to then empower the man because the role model is different. Yeah. But just on that topic, how are mums in the public eye judged differently to dads in the public eye?
I have a stark example. I remember when I was, so I was campaigning for the European Parliament election. I was called in by the then prime minister when Jack was, I don't know, 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
So he was born on the 24th of July and mid-August I was called in for this meeting. And John told me, what do you think he wants to speak about? And I'm like, elections, MEP elections are coming up. Probably he wants to ask me about that. And John goes, what are you going to tell him?
Let's prepare for this strong meeting.
And I'm like, no, as if I have a two-week-old boy. I mean, it's the last thing on my mind. And I go for this meeting. I leave this two-week-old boy with John. His father was a minister at the time. They had the minister close by, so at least he could take the baby there. And I went for this meeting, all, you know, strong. I'm going to say no and everything. I come out of the meeting saying yes. And, you know.
Same experience.
How am I going to explain to my husband?
I go down the stairs and I'm like, now I have an issue. How am I going to tell John this? So I go and I'm like, hi, John, all right. I don't say anything. So what was it about? About the election. Oh, what did you say? You said no. No, I said yes. Okay, how are we going to do this? But then we started, you know, it was a family thing. But what I remember is, so I had this newborn and there was another male candidate who had a newborn as well. So for C. Jack was like 3 months and he had a 1 month old baby. And, you know, you campaign, you go around in clubs, different places. And I remember this woman and she goes like, and you, a Maltese, obviously, went. Why are you contesting? Don't you have a newborn? How do you think you're going to do this? Why don't you just go and take care of your kid? And I'm there, like, receiving this harsh criticism. Yes. And I'm like, why are you telling me? You know, he has a newborn.
Yes.
And his newborn is younger than mine. And she goes, yes, but you're the mommy, not him.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, so he could have done it. And Mayina, no.
No. No.
I shouldn't even have dared contesting an election, probably because I was going to Brussels, etc. So
actually, if that, and I don't know who this other MEP, but if this MEP was then photographed with his son.
Yeah, probably
at the swings,
said,
everyone would be like, oh my God, he's an MEP and he takes his son to the swings. And he takes him out in the pushchair.
He was a candidate, so why I don't...
No. I mean, I don't know who it is. No, I don't know who it is. So, but you know what I mean?
Yes,
if, with the dad,
true.
It's like, yeah. Oh my God.
He's a superhero. The dad is a superhero.
But if you took him out, took your son, he'd be like, oh, she managed to find some time in her busy day to take him to the swings. The narrative is...
Completely
do you find
different.
That narrative yes, being different?
I get it all the time. I mean, I was still studying as well when I had my first... And the comment I always get is, how do you manage? Fair enough. I mean, fair comment. My husband never got, how do you manage? He gets, how are you going to financially manage? So my husband gets that comment, finances. I get the time comment. But does it? Why? Why do I get the time and he gets the finances? I mean, anyone can be the breadwinner, like Miriam was saying, and time-wise, we all do what we can. And you mentioned 50-50. Each family is different. Mm-hmm. Some can be, for example, for me, I don't think it's 50-50, honestly. Some days it's 100 me, some days it's more him, some days it's my mother. So it's not about 50-50, really. It's whatever suits the family, on the day, at the time, in the circumstances. And I think this is something that even I need to say sometimes. Today is this day, tomorrow it's another day, and I could have more support. Sometimes I do get frustrated, I'm speaking honestly, even with my husband. When is he coming home? I need to go to... Recently, I'm going to speak very... I had a radio program at 5, you know, I have to be there. I can't be late for radio. He's late. I'm getting frustrated, you know, but we all have our meetings, our priorities. And that day it looked like I had to give more, and we had to manage just on time. Mm-hmm. And the next day I had more time to get ready slowly, and he had the morning where he had to take my daughter to school. So it's about coping, but it's not about 50-50 each day. Mm-hmm. And it's about patience as well.
Yeah,
it's definitely about patience, at least for me. Let me speak about that. Patience with my daughter, patience with my newborn as well. When, like last night, he decided he didn't want to stop crying, and my daughter woke up, and my husband remained asleep. but on other days, you know, like I said, he spends the whole night with them. It's about whatever suits you.
Yeah. And whatever works for you.
And whatever works for you.
And each family
is completely
different. Has a different solution.
Exactly.
Because the moment we start saying, you know, I do this and it works for me, it's like, you know, the perfect model.
Exactly.
You start putting a lot of pressure on others.
Exactly.
There is
my
no right
perfect
or wrong.
Model is totally imperfect for you. Exactly. And and vice versa.
And that's why we shouldn't judge and feel the pressure. So if people are hearing us today and enough, I'm here 7 weeks postpartum and I'm talking in this way, for me it maybe worked, but for you it might not work. What I'm doing is wrong.
No,
I mean, that's it when it comes to motherhood, families in general. It's whatever works for the
that family. True. Exactly. True. We need to be less judgmental and accept more these innovative ways
of parenting,
of upbringing, of how you deal.
Yeah.
But some people, some mother wants to stay home. Some people want to do whatever they want with their maternity leave.
Yes.
For me, we were talking, and like same with Miriam. For me, it was good for me to get out and back into work straight away.
That's
my mental health was better.
Yeah,
being
I perform better when I'm working. It's true. My mood is better.
It's not the same for everyone.
Exactly.
I want to pick on Miriam. You said this innovative way of doing things and the world we're living today. And that world involves a lot of social media. I'm going to target this question mainly at you, Lara, because you are a mummy in the public eye, but you were also raised by a mummy in the public eye. Mm. And I know you've chosen to keep your daughter quite private.
Mm-hmm.
How was that decision made between you and Neil? And how has your childhood been a factor in that decision, or has it not?
Neil's social media is inexistent. I'm the one who takes care of it. He's not bothered at all. So that's one problem solved. Back to the initial question, and this is where it starts from. So my mom, at the time, social media was non-existent. Television, there was only one station at the time. She was working on broadcasting when she was 14 years old, and in 16 she went into radio diffusion. And when I was born, I was I don't to make it sound like my grandmother raised me, but I spent a lot of time with my grandparents, because my mom, exactly like you two women, she had to go back to her duties immediately, even during my pregnancy. So her appearances were always, it was part of her, you know, and she was a journalist at the time. She used to read the 11 o'clock news on Television Malta. So for me, I remember before going to bed, when my kids, at my friends at school, and the next morning their mothers used to take them out to school, I always felt like I was the odd one out, because my mother is still very career driven.
We know when we need to take that pause, that break, but we feel guilty for stepping away from our partners, kids, and work. We feel like we need someone's permission to have something we simply deserve. The She Word has partnered up with Myoka Spas to give you just that, your permission to take time for yourself, the time you usually wouldn't take, but really should. Use code SHEWORD for 10% off any individual treatment when booking online at myoka.com, or enjoy 10% off any gift box in-store with gift vouchers over 100 euros.
Tell thanks to her, she supported me on many other things, mm-hmm. obviously. And late at night, you know, I'm off to bed and I kiss my father goodnight. And most of the time, my mother is still working. So I never found this world of broadcasting very fancy. Mm-hmm. And your next question might be, so why are you in broadcasting? Because when I was young, and at the time, Miriam was a journalist as well, I used to be like, I really want to be a journalist. Because we're on the same station. At the time, I was hosting children's shows when One Television opened when I was 8. I was 8 or 9 years old. I started with radio television programs at 7. And at 8, 9, we moved on to television. That is when the station opened. And we were kind of colleagues, but she was the eldest, sexy one. I was still a very young girl. Television programs is what I enjoyed doing because I used to, in my holidays and my midterms, I used to always join my mommy doing her radio shows. And then she's like, shh, don't talk right now. When the light goes on red on air, don't talk. And I used to be like static like this for a whole conversation, not moving. If I do a noise, my mom would be like, and I'm not moving. So without me knowing, it was ingrained in me. And I felt this need of being part of the broadcasting sphere. But I remember, and this is the instance that really changed me forever. When I was 10 years old, I used to sing at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I had a rock band and everything. I tried a lot of things, mm-hmm. artistic things in my career. But this is one of the things which made me hate singing. I was competing in this international festival. And I went to sing in Italy at the festival called Bimbo Star at the time. I was 10 years old. So I had to miss school for a week in order to travel to Italy, take part in this festival, which was the festival that replaced Zecchino d'Oro at the mm-hmm. time. And surprisingly enough, I won this festival in Italy and it was a real big thing. And I was on the news on Malta and stuff like that. And people used to come to the airport to greet this 10-year-old child coming down. It was a real big thing for me and in my career. And at the time, our educational system was very focused and still is obviously on education, but not with extracurricular activities. Yes,
more because academic.
It was much more Hitler mode academic. Mm-hmm. And I remember this teacher, very particular teacher. And she started yelling at me in the corridors. Oh, so for you, in order to pursue your career, you know, this very mm-hmm. English, you decided to miss school because I asked for some notes, which I missed during the time I was out of school. And oh my God, she made me cry. And I didn't want to go to school anymore because of this teacher. And I did not find support on my artistic career and on my music career at all because this teacher decided that she didn't like me anymore. So
it wasn't for you.
It was.
According to her.
To pursue my career. Anyway, and after that, when I was then hosting children's TV shows on a political station, by the way, at the time, I was not aware of what's nationalist and what's Labour Party. I had no idea of what it was. I only focused on my career in children's shows, and I was really happy hosting this show with different characters and so on and so forth. I went into senior school. And then in Form 1, that is where I had encountered my first time of bullying coming from another student.
Okay.
Where this girl used to make fun of the show. And I am a very sensitive character, by the way, as you might have already realized. This girl was started with the bullying and oh, God knows what she did. But I wanted to quit school. I didn't want to go to school anymore. I wanted to change the school. It had really changed me. I became very bitter and very cold. I did not want to make new friends. I was an only child. I did not have any brothers and sisters. I did not open up about my problem at the time. And that is when I went up to my mom and I'm like, screw TV. Screw my career. I don't want to be a journalist. I hate being in front of the camera. And it changed my character a lot. In fact, that is when I made the switch into acting.
Okay.
Because somehow psychologically, and this is my psychologist really explains this to me a lot. He said, so you decided from a psychological point of view to switch into another character when you go in front of the camera, not portraying your real self, mm-hmm. but actually acting out another person instead of showing your real self. So that apparently was part of my therapeutic agenda, which I was building up as days were passing by. So automatically, it was always dik it-tifla Angela Juice. She's Angela yes. Juice's daughter. So I had to reach expectations, yes. get much better grades at school, and this and that. And I think maybe I'm a little bit too conservative because of that manner.
Yeah.
If I don't know if we're...
Which makes sense. So you almost want to protect your child and not put that much pressure on her early on.
It's a different...
To live up to...
The way I see it, and I might be judged on this, but it doesn't matter. This is how I see it.
Yes.
And in this age of this digitalization, digital platform, whatever, you don't know what's going to happen with the photos. Mm-hmm. And this is the first generation of children in their upbringing that in 10 years' time, their whole childhood is actually super exposed on social media.
Documented, yeah.
Exactly. So the way I see it, it's like, listen, she has her own, she will have her own character. She decides to go on social media. Eventually, it's up to her to decide and see what she wants to do because I had no option. So I was kind of...
But that's so interesting. You've learned from what bothered you.
And I changed you don't want it. I wanted to break the cycle, yes. kind of.
Yes. Wow. Thank you so much. It's been an eye-opener. But one thing I think I have learned is... You are mums and you go through everything that all of the other mums go through, the juggle, the guilt, the sleep deprivation, the judgment. The only difference between you guys and other mums is you've had to develop a much thicker skin because you have to go True. Through it in front of everyone. And when I post a photo and I get 4 likes, mainly from my mom, my husband, you guys don't just get the likes, you get a barrage of unnecessary keyboard warriors. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you for
being such an eye-opener and just having a really honest conversation.
It was really interesting.
It's been a privilege.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thanks for the positivity.